Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. In 1 week, polls will close across California and votes will be tallied for the midterm. A statewide race that hasn't garnered as much as a spotlight as one would think is for governor. Governor Gavin Newsom is running for a second term in what might feel like deja vu after surviving a gubernatorial recall last year. His challenger is Republican State Senator Brian Dahle, with a decade of experience at the state legislature. The two challenged each other in the one and only debate that competed with NFL on a Sunday afternoon. We reached out to Governor Newsom for an interview about running for re-election and have yet to get a response from his campaign. But State Senator Dahle and I had a wide-ranging conversation about his vision for California and the different solutions he believes would move the state forward. Our conversation was part of an event hosted by the Sacramento Press Club and held at CalMatters in downtown. All right. Well, we have about 30 minutes. It's probably going to go by like that. There's a lot to cover. But thank you for joining us, State Senator Dahle.
Thanks for having me, Vicky.
You know, we were talking just a little bit about the district that you encompass. It's 11 counties going all the way up to the Oregon border, down through the Sierra Nevada foothills, but also including counties like Sacramento, Placer, El Dorado. What has that taught you covering a pretty diverse area of 1 million constituents? How do you fairly represent the people in your district when they can be pretty different from Redding to El Dorado Hills to South Lake Tahoe and even small communities like Barkleyville and Quincy?
Well, I've had the opportunity to actually live in the district for my whole life and was a county supervisor for 16 years. So I worked with other county supervisors across those counties. And so learning the differences of this, the nuances between Sacramento County and, let's say, Modoc are a lot different when it comes to geographic, but people are pretty much the same throughout California. And as I've been campaigning, I've been noticing that more as well. But at the end of the day, people just want the government to work for them. And one size fits all legislation that comes out of the legislature doesn't always work for different geographic areas. So I've been a champion of trying to educate legislators in the 10 years I've been in the legislature to bring them out to my district to say, hey, you know, what does my district have in common with yours? And 60% of California's water comes from my district. So when I had Reggie Jones Sawyer, when I was in his district, so he's in
Los Angeles,
right? He has USC. He also has, Compton and Florence and Normandy, where the Rodney King riots were. So we got to, and I asked him, where does your water come from? And this is his exact response. He's like, out of the tap, idiot, right? And I'm like, well, oh, that's true. But it also originates from somewhere, and a lot of that water originates in our district, and that's why you should care about water that's coming out of my district, and because it serves your constituents. So we build those bridges, and that's been very effective for me over the years in the legislature to actually not focus so much on what we disagree on, but let's focus on the things we agree on and get things done.
And finding common ground. Your wife is also in the state assembly, took over your district, District 1. I guess, how long have you wanted, both of you wanted to be involved in politics and elected office as a family?
Well, actually, I was running for office for supervisor when I actually met my wife. She's 10 years younger than I am. So I was on the campaign trail. I met her at a fishing lodge, actually. And we got married years later. But I've always been engaged in my community. And so that's why I ran for supervisor. I wanted to make sure that, my community was taken care of. And then when I ran for the Senate, we built all these relationships with the legislators, and Megan was part of that as well. I mean, many of the legislators had been to our farm. So, I mean, the Speaker, Lorena Gonzalez, so many people had been to our home. So she had a relationship with a lot of the legislators as well. And we wanted to make sure our district was represented and taken care of the way I had been taking care of it. So I said, I think you should run, right? And the awesome thing was is she won, and we get to live together in Sacramento, and our daughter goes to school here. So I get to go home to my wife every night, which is a lot better than staying here in town without being close to my family.
Imagine it's also interesting conversations at the dinner table.
Well, because that is a question that's asked a lot. It's like, we vote opposite of each other a lot. Like, I would say 10 or 11 times last year. The first year was a couple times, and people are like, well, how's that go? And I'm like, well, she'll say I'm wrong, and I say she just doesn't understand. But we still are happily married, and we raise our family. And I think we need more of that, actually, in the legislature, where we can disagree, but we still have, the common goal in mind.
Yeah, as we are all well aware, your Republican colleagues about a year ago tried to unseat Governor Newsom. They were unsuccessful. Why do you think the recall failed, and what do you think has changed in the last 12 months and counting?
Well, obviously, when you have a recall, you have all these names on the ballot, and you know, it's confusing, and people are, it's not a normal cycle where you're everybody's running for office, and so you have just basically that one seat that you're that is in question. So this race obviously is a whole lot different because there's a lot of races going on. People are focused on voting, and it's the top two. So it's there's two choices. Actually, there's only one, and I believe that's me. But there's two choices. So people are engaged in elections right now. We noticed that during the recall, people didn't vote. It was low voter turnout, and so this is going to be a lot different in this race. And in the last since the recall, you know, we've seen gas prices expand greatly in California. There's inflation, crime is running rampant. We have a lot more focus on. I think Californians are realizing that what they are told is happening by like Gavin Newsom is not the reality they're living. The reality is our schools are failing. We have power shortages. We have no water. We have crime running rampant. We have homelessness. And they're talking about how they're fixing all these problems by putting money at it. But Californians don't feel safe, and crime is up. And so I think you're going to see a lot of people go, wait a minute, I know that I may be from a certain party that's telling me that it's this way, but I'm living something different. And I'm hearing that out on the campaign trail. There's a lot of people who have never voted Republican before. I will tell you, a lot of moms. I'm very surprised by the amount of mothers who are saying, you know, I don't like what's happening in my education system. I didn't like that we were locked down. So they're coming over and they're saying, I'm going to support you for the first time ever. I'm going to vote for.
But also a lot of the issues that you're bringing up when it comes to drought and water and homelessness and affordability, they didn't just spring up in the past 12 months. They have been longstanding. And yet for more than a decade, Democrats have had control. Why do you think those issues, which are very important, haven't pushed the needle enough to get more Republicans in office?
Because they've expanded so much that the average everyday Californian is realizing that the policies are what change it. Why is it that you can drive to Nevada and a gallon of gas is $2 a gallon less? And so that makes no sense. And across our nation, it's less. So they realize that the policies that are actually coming out of California are driving up their cost. We pay 70% higher electricity rates than the average in the nation, and they went up 20% last year. Well, if you're paying that bill like I am, you see that go up every month, and you're like, what am I getting for it? And why is this happening to me? And it's not happening. And people are fleeing California. And there's a reason they're fleeing is because they can't afford to live here. So I think that's why you're seeing a change.
And we'll get to affordability in just a moment. But one thing that really did happen in the last 12 months that has been a big national issue as well as a state issue is the topic of abortion. You clearly are pro-life and you've made that stance. But being pro-life or supporting abortion, there can be, you know, a wide range of views and scenarios. And I just want to get some clarity on your stance on being pro-life. Because during the debate, there were some extreme examples thrown by the governor. And I want to give you the opportunity to respond to them. I mean, he used a scenario where a 10-year-old girl who was raped by her father would be forced to give birth to their sibling. When it comes to your views on pro-life, is it no abortions, no exceptions, or are there some scenarios where you would support terminating a pregnancy?
So first off, let's talk about where we are in California. Right now, today, the law is up to six months, you can have an abortion. So that's already law. Prop 1 expands that to up to a minute before birth.
Well, that's not necessarily the case. And if that did happen, it would be the mother's life would be at risk. A lot of pregnant people who are pregnant past two trimesters, they want that child.
So let me just finish my thought and then we can talk about it. So I think that is extreme. And I am pro-life. I think that Californians are going to have that opportunity to speak November 8th. Now let's talk about, I am in favor of saving a life however I can save a life. And that's my opinion. But we never get to have those debates or we never get to have those opportunities to talk about how we're going to get there in California because we have a party that's in control that says all or nothing. Now, I would be happy to have conversations about how we can save lives and how we can protect those extreme examples of what happens, but we never get that opportunity. It's like, you know what, you're pro-life, and he said things that I've never had the opportunity to even debate. So I would love to have that opportunity to talk to Californians about how can we actually save lives and talk about these extreme things that do happen and what would be the outcome of that. But we don't get that opportunity because it's all sound bites. It's all painting a picture, but we don't get to have those opportunities. I voted for contraceptives, one of the only Republicans that voted for contraceptives. I think that's smart. Why would we not do that? It keeps you away from having a situation where you have to make a choice. So I'm in a different area, but I never get to have that opportunity. And that's what I think is really unfortunate about this issue. Californians are stuck with extreme all the way. We don't get to have that conversation of what happens if somebody had incest and they were pregnant. We don't get to have that. And that, I think, is very unfortunate because we have a governor who is so focused on getting national press and running for president that we don't, in the legislature, get to have a conversation where we can have some balance and we can talk about what would be best in those extreme situations and how could we get to where we would have common ground.
What would you say to voters who maybe support your other policies surrounding crime or homelessness, water and drought, but are uncomfortable with the idea that I understand you don't have wide sweeping authority as governor, but you do have the power of veto and executive order, that are concerned with your capability of restricting, reducing access or funding for reproductive services, which includes abortion care?
So the governor has basically a third of the budget. You get to propose it. But there's two other branches of government, normally, which we're not, haven't been under for the last 2 years. The governor has just been pushing his agenda because of the state of emergency. I've been in the legislature. It's a give and take between the legislature and the governor, which we haven't had that opportunity. So as governor, I will put my proposal together, and then we will work with the pro tem and all the members of the legislature, not just the three that we have now. Typically what happens now is we have the governor, the pro tem, and the speaker push an agenda through, and we have a yes or no vote on it. We don't get to participate very much. And that's, if you're inside the Capitol, you'll hear Democrats are frustrated with that same analogy because they're boxed in and they don't get to have their priorities put forth as well. So as governor, I will propose a budget, and then I will work with the legislature in the process that was set up by our Constitution to be able to put forth a budget that works good for Californians.
Let's move to cost of living, and we can go in a lot of directions when it comes to affordability, but one of your proposals or solutions is creating more affordable housing. The median household income in the state is like $78,000. The median home value is like $540,000. That's a huge gap. That would mean a mortgage, especially with interest rates at over 7%, would be over $3,000 a month. Rent is $1,500 across the state. Obviously, we know that could be extraordinarily different if you're in areas like Sacramento, San Francisco, San Diego, or Los Angeles. What do you meaningfully do in 2023 if elected governor to make the cost of living more affordable, to make becoming a first-time home buyer or just not stressing out about rent lessen that stress and that anxiety?
So the quickest way to drive down inflation is drive down the cost of energy. So, and let me explain. So we have a trucking company. In the last 8 months, diesel fuel alone has gone up $200 a day per truck. So that's $1,000 a week. That's $4,000 a month that I have to pass on to the people I'm hauling the freight for. That drives up the cost of a gallon of milk, a dozen eggs, a loaf of bread, because we produce all, everything gets moved by energy. So if you drive down the cost of energy, you drive down the cost of food, and you also drive down the cost of transportation for yourself to put fuel in your car. That's on the gas and diesel side. So if we drive down the cost of energy, Californians across the board save. The other thing is, as I mentioned earlier, we pay 70% higher electricity rates, and you might not be aware, but Californian ratepayers actually pay other states to take our electricity, about $1 billion a year, because we don't have the transmission to move the power where it's overproduced to where it's underproduced. So we actually kick power into Nevada and Arizona, and our ratepayers pay them to take our power because there's no place to store it. Now, the governor talks about we're going to put it in batteries, and I will tell you, we're going to need a heck of a lot of batteries to do the thousands of megawatts that we're talking about to power California. I simply would say, let's build transmission lines so we can move power around our state, which would drive the cost down. The other thing I want to talk about on energy is that the basically two green sources we have available to us are wind and solar, is what we've put all of our money into. And we give tax credits for wind and solar. At the same time, that means the rate, the taxes, we're paying for it in taxes, and we're also paying for it on higher energy costs. So that's a double hit on energy. Geothermal is available in California. Most people don't even know about it, but there's hot water in the ground. It's in Imperial County. It's in San Francisco. It's up north. You basically drill a well, you pump the hot water out, and it makes electricity. You put the water right back in the ground. Green. We need to capitalize on that ability, and it works when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing. So there are a lot of other opportunities out there, but we never get to have those conversations. And those are the things I want to bring to the table to drive down the cost of energy. And then the third thing on inflation is we need government to be more efficient. We have so much waste in government. I mean, think about, because of bad policies, $32 billion, I think it was KCRA's story about the EDD fraud, where we basically, the California businesses are going to pay that $32 billion back that was given out because Gavin Newsom took off the one requirement where you have to, as when you're on unemployment, you have to ask your employer if you're actually employed. And during COVID, he took that off.
Where but the issues within DVD, you've been a law, EDD, you've been a lawmaker for a decade, go well before Governor Newsom, the systemic issues with EDD. I mean, you even have, like, Governor Gray Davis was talking about EDD
issues.
Right,
so my point is why doesn't it ever get fixed? The Democrat Party has been in control for 25 years of the legislature. So that's the point of this whole election is, do you want to continue to get more of what you've been getting? Promises with no real change. Why would you not ask the employer if somebody was employed? He actually took that off during COVID, and we saw $32 billion. Again, we talk about homelessness. $20 billion spent in homelessness, $75,000 per homeless person, and we have 22,000 more homeless people. And I can go on. The bullet train was supposed to be finished in 2020. We spent $10 billion, and not one foot of track's been laid, and it may be not even an electrified train when it gets done. We need government to work more efficiently. We need to cut out the waste and abuse, and then we can give that money back to the taxpayers, and people will actually be able to stay in California.
So we also have a shortage of units. I'm getting back. We got a little off track. Getting back to affordable housing, okay. We have a shortage of units across the state as well. How do you build more
so
quickly and affordably?
So you drive down the cost of. So when you drive energy down, you also get the products you need to build houses. You need lumber, concrete, sheetrock, all those things. You drive down the cost of producing those by driving down the energy cost, number one. And number two, we have to streamline our regulatory process. The California Environmental Quality Act, which I love, is a great law, has been used as a pawn for labor and business against business and for the environment, and people that are trying to protect the environment, and it drives up the cost. Now, as you're aware, we were able to streamline that process through legislation. We did it right here for the Golden One Arena. We streamlined the process. The power brokers put it together, and we passed that. We've done it for lots of sports arenas. We also did it just this year for the students at Berkeley who couldn't get housing, and it was tied up in court. We passed a law for housing. So if we can do it for Berkeley and the students there, we can do it for residential homes in California and get the same job done. It's if the will of the people in the legislature is to get it done, we can do it.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're talking with Republican State Senator Brian Dahle, who is running for governor. We're going to continue the conversation in just a moment. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.